Yippee-i-o-ki-yay. 7 minutes after 3 o'clock. Sheesh, it's 94 degrees in Santa Fe right now. It's hot out there. 94. Probably going to get another degree or two hotter. Still a chance of rain. There's some clouds out there with some rain in them. Tomorrow, sunny in 85. Thursday, sunny in 86. Friday, sunny in 86. Chance of rain on Saturday and Sunday. And Monday, 30 to 40%. 94 degrees right now here in Santa Fe. Matteo Pacheno won the tickets for the Art Institute. Mr. Nelson of the North Side, a film about the early life of Prince in the Twin Cities. Matteo, thanks for calling. Sorry I butchered your name. And we have more of those packages to give away on Wednesday and Thursday. 5 tickets on Wednesday, 5 tickets on Thursday for the Raspberry Beret package. All Prince, all the time. All right. We're in talk to Jay Coughlin now. Jay is with Nuclear Watch New Mexico. Hey, Jay, good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm just fine. Thank you for having me.
Good. Good, good, good. Nuclear Watch New Mexico, what the heck you guys do?
Oh, our biggest thing that we do is watchdog the Los Alamos National Laboratory. And there's plenty of work there. There's plenty of issues.
They need watchdogging?
Oh, I firmly believe so, yes.
It's our government. They would never lie to us. They would never do anything that wasn't on the up and up, would they? These are scientists.
This is the very government that injected some of its citizens with plutonium without their consent. So, no, I don't think we can totally trust our government.
Is your background as a scientist?
No, I pride myself as being a concerned citizen, and I've been doing this work for just a little bit shy of 30 years.
Who else is are members of Nuclear Watch New Mexico?
We're technically not a membership organization. Okay. We want to just stick to the issues, so we're pretty lean and mean in that respect.
So there's like 3 of you?
Yes, there are 3 of us. I'd like to think that our influence is somewhat wide-ranging. We not only deal with local issues, but national issues as well. And, you know, for example, I take 3 or 4 trips to Washington and walk the halls of Congress every year.
All right. Some things that have happened in the past that you guys have dealt with, I would imagine, would be things like a blue flash in the last couple of years, right? With, I guess, plutonium rods getting into close proximity with each other. Did that happen?
The flash that you're talking about, which is a
or is it
nuclear
a green
criticality
flash?
Accident, didn't actually happen. And that's fortunate because,
yeah,
you know, people
yeah
are going to get fried
right
with it. But when you put a certain amount of special nuclear materials, and this usually involves, but not always, plutonium, when you put them too closely together, yes, they can flash. There can be a spontaneous nuclear criticality. And that particular incident that you're talking about was actually kind of a staged photo op in which some basic nuclear safety protocols weren't observed. And this was not a just one-time event. There's a chronic pattern of this happening time and time again at the Los Alamos lab.
People also being injured and people being exposed to radiation. And because it's a nuclear lab, it's a national laboratory, they basically, the rule is basically to deny everything, not to talk, just say the claim it never happened. And especially in the flash incident, they said, no, nobody was ever in danger. That never happened. There was not too much material. Criticality was not ever even being close to being reached. So to that and to, you know, that kind of, I guess, denying that things happen, is it necessary? Is it just as you know, status quo for the government?
Well, it is somewhat of a the usual course of business, but what I would specifically point to is that we know about that incident and others primarily because of an independent safety board commissioned by Congress. This is the Defense Nuclear Facilities Safety Board. And what's very interesting is that, of course, it's the Department of Energy that runs Los Alamos right. and the other national laboratories. And DOE is currently, instead of, you know, strenuously trying to correct everything, is trying to kill the messenger, that being the safety board, by unilaterally issuing an internal order that will restrict the safety board's access to the DOE nuclear facilities. So to repeat, this is kind of a situation of looking to kill the messenger instead of taking the message of nuclear safety really to heart.
And the reason for that is what? What is the rationale for that? Save money to do away with bureaucracy? It's all better. Everything is safe. Don't worry about it.
Well, I'll give you my own speculation. I would like to think that it's informed speculation, but it is speculation. You won't find this in writing. But this safety board played a major role in causing the construction costs to rise an order of magnitude, that is to say, you know, tenfold, of a plutonium facility that Los Alamos badly wanted. And then this situation was kind of echoed for a highly enriched uranium facility in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Specifically, the safety board's seismic concerns triggered this escalation in construction costs for two different facilities that, you know, are just on the very front line of resumed industrial-scale nuclear weapons production in the U.S., that basically the safety board stands in the way of the nuclear weaponeers getting what they want. And there's actually somewhat of a long history, long by that I mean more than a decade, of attempts to basically hogtie the safety board to keep it from doing its job. The current situation is so far the most serious. I repeat myself, but DOE has issued an internal order restricting safety board access, which I'll add appears to be in contradiction with the safety board's enabling legislation. In other words, it's illegal, but yet might makes right, and DOE appears to be getting away with it.
There is no seismic activity around Los Alamos or in Tennessee, correct?
No, there is seismic activity. Oh, yes, it's quite a threat. It's nothing like California.
It's not Fukushima.
It's not Japan. But absolutely, there is seismic activity. You know, a little known fact, and, you know, I'm not trying to engage in over-exaggerate or anything, but it's kind of a point of interest. There's really just two supervolcanoes in the United States. One is Yellowstone, and the other is the Jemez Mountains. And they're dormant, you know, but they're not extinct. And then also the Rio Grande Valley, I believe, is the second biggest seismic rift in the world after the famous one in East Africa. But in short, we don't have large earthquakes, but there is always the possibility of it. And when you're talking nuclear facilities, they, of course, have to be built to very high standards, including seismic standards.
Well, I'm hoping they build them really safe because Lanel is upwind from Santa Fe.
That is correct.
All right. So there's a lot going on up there, and you guys are keeping an eye on it. Nuclear Watch New Mexico, Jay Coughlin is our guest. So, Jay, were you guys concerned with the kitty litter and what happened with the fracturing of the container at WIP that closed it down? That was, what, 2014, Valentine's Day 2014. You guys were concerned about that and concerned with all the material being cleaned up from Lanel, from producing nuclear weapons over decades and decades, being shipped down to the salt mines near Carlsbad. How is that cleanup going, and how is the, I guess, getting WIP fully back online proceeding?
Well, you started this discussion asking rhetorically and comically or humorously, does Los Alamos need watchdogging? And when you asked that question, the WIP incident, Waste Isolation Pilot Plant incident, was the first thing that popped into my mind of a good example why Los Alamos Lab needs watchdogging. And specifically, Los Alamos sent radioactive waste to the WIP, to the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant, using a form of wheat-based or organic kitty litter, which self-combusted, and it ended up shutting WIP down for just short of 3 years, with an estimated cost of something like $1.5 billion
to
the taxpayer to reopen it.
Yeah, that's a big mistake. Even I think Rick Perry would agree with a big oops for that one.
Yeah, and basically DOE got rid of that contractor. It took a while.
So the latest from WIP that I have seen, Jay, is that this giant shaft that is being bored down into the salt caverns for ventilation is proceeding. That is proceeding, but that has to happen to provide more air down there.
And the reason why they have to do that is because the old shaft, old ventilation shaft, was contaminated.
Right.
You know? So, you know, the underground in WIP is something like 2,500 feet underground. But when that barrel ruptured, you know, came up the ventilation shaft, and then it actually contaminated 22 workers on the surface.
It never happened.
Yeah, but it did.
Can you hang around?
I sure can.
We'll take a break. We'll come back because we're only about a third of the way into this mystery. Jay Coughlin is our guest, Nuclear Watch, New Mexico. They do wonderful work. 19 minutes after 3 o'clock. We'll be right back on Talk 1260, 103.7 KTRC. We stream, we podcast at SantaFe.com.
And my dad's blue Valium. Rain was coming down and the radio was playing. Mary was talking a million miles a minute. I could not hear one word she was saying. Once I was lost, I was gone. Listen and leave on. In another world, oh, in another place.
Coming right back to the Richard Eade Show, the voice of Santa Fe, here on KTRC, Santa Fe's news talk leader. This is the Richard Eade Show, the voice of Santa Fe on KTRC, Santa Fe's news talk leader.
We'll never be a leader.
Four minutes after 3 o'clock, our guest is Jay Coughlin from Nuclear Watch New Mexico. Jay, do you guys have a website?
We sure do. Doesn't everybody nowadays? But,
well, I thought so.
Yeah, but ours is pretty popular, you know, over 2 million hits a year. But in any event, www.nukewatch, that's nukewatch.org.
Who funds you?
Primarily foundations.
Okay, so we have this new consortium. We have a new regime running LANL. Have you seen, have you seen a change in culture? A lot of what people feared would happen with the kitty litter and the closure of WIP was basically, I guess the most common used term was a cowboy culture at LANL. People not even following, people not really caring about reading the rules or reading the ingredients of stuff they're putting together. Have you seen a change?
Well, you know, first of all, there's actually two managers at the Los Alamos lab now. And the prime contract running the nuclear weapons programs is Triad. That's what it's called. The second contract is the cleanup contract being run by a contractor called N3B.
That's right.
Now, they're both relatively new, so I can't report to you that I notice that much of a change of culture. There's some circumstantial evidence, and this is what I want to get to. You know, there's a saying up there in the lab, same old trees, different monkeys. Sometimes it's the reverse. But, okay, so we got new contractors. But what I wanted to get to in this show is that the cleanup contractor and the Department of Energy is making the claim at public meetings that cleanup at Los Alamos is more than half complete. And I think that's just an astonishing claim. We don't have the cleanup contractor or DOE adequately explaining what that means. But, you know, to make a long story short, there's some very large radioactive waste dumps up in Los Alamos that contain on the order of like 150,000 cubic meters of radioactive waste, you know, above our groundwater aquifer. Now, the aquifer's down, say, 900 feet. But in one instance, plutonium has already been detected 200 feet, in other words, about 20% of the way to groundwater, from the surface of Area G, which is the laboratory's largest waste dump. But to repeat, the Department of Energy and the cleanup contractor are now claiming that cleanup's more than half done, which, again, is just an astonishing claim.
All right, so explain how all of this stuff was stored. All of this, a lot of it is low-level. A lot of it is equipment and clothing and tools used to create nuclear weapons. It is contaminated, but it's not super, super hot. But there is some that is hot. So explain kind of how it is stored.
Well, first of all, the way it's physically stored is in unlined pits and trenches.
Unlined.
Yeah,
basically,
correct.
Just dug a hole, threw the stuff in it, and covered it up.
Shafts and pits, yes. And, you know, it'll be in barrels, it'll be in cardboard boxes, it'll be in fiberglass boxes, et cetera. But again, and in some cases, the shafts are like culverts, you know, vertical culverts, corrugated steel.
Right.
But, yeah. You know, you can't go. Now, Los Alamos, of course, is a federal facility. But if you were, you know, Podunk Town in New Mexico and you wanted to apply for a landfill from the New Mexico Environment Department, you're not going to get away with a online landfill. You're going to have a modern landfill. You're going to have to collect the leachate, you know, that is any possible liquids that form on the liner, et cetera. But here we are with a federal institution, and plus, you yourself remarked that this stuff is not that hot. Well, the fact is, we don't know. The largest dump opened in 1957, when it was still the Wild West, and you know, before there were environmental regulations and bookkeeping was poor. We know that a large portion of those wastes are so-called transuranic waste, the kind, these are all radioactive, the kind that should be sent to WIP. And, you know, here's a bureaucratic or regulatory twist of fate, but wastes in place before 1970 aren't even counted really as wastes because there weren't environmental laws on the books. So therefore, you know, it's like, virtually, they don't exist. But when we're talking about plutonium contaminated waste, plutonium-239, the isotope that's used in weapons, has a half-life of 24,000 years. And we're talking about these wastes remaining dangerous for 100,000 years.
What's the biggest danger here?
Ultimately, and I'm not suggesting that this is an immediate danger, but ultimately, it is that our groundwater becomes contaminated. And I would want your listeners to know that as late as, about 1998, the laboratory was categorically claiming that groundwater contamination was impossible, and even went so far as to formally request a waiver from the State Environment Department from having even to monitor for groundwater contamination. And now we know that groundwater under the lab, first of all, it has a serious chromium hexavalent plume.
That was my next question. Can you hang around for another break? I'm sorry.
I sure can.
Because there's a whole bunch more stuff we probably need to talk about. It's important. 31 minutes after 3 o'clock. Be back with Jay Coughlin, Nuclear Watch, New Mexico. Talk 1260, 103.7. We stream, we podcast at SantaFe.com.
In a white man's world. Under our roof is a baby girl. I thought this world could be hers one day. But her mama knew better. I'm a white man living in a white man's town. Wanna take a shot of cocaine?
This is the Richard Eade Show, the voice of Santa Fe on KTRC, Santa Fe's news talk leader.
Tuesday afternoon, third day of September, 94 hot degrees here in Santa Fe. 34 minutes after 3 o'clock. We're talking about Los Alamos National Laboratory and the current situation up there with nuclear waste, removal of nuclear waste, and the new leadership at the lab with Jay Coughlin from Nuclear Watch, New Mexico. All right, so the chromium plume, which is, I guess, threatening San Ildefonso, and the Powake Valley, what created that? What created the chromium?
Well, there were cooling towers at the laboratory, and they were using a liquid solution of chromium to keep the corrosion down. And this is actually a fairly common industrial practice back in the 1970s. So in any event, the chromium was liquid. The liquid effluent was piped out into a canyon. This effluent over time actually skipped to a different canyon, but it has now reached the deep groundwater, you know, some 800 to 900 feet. And
so it was it was just in a pipe, and they just kind of let it spill out in the canyon and soak into the earth, and it's like, boom, boom, that's good?
Yeah, back in the 70s, yes.
My goodness, all right.
So, well, it, you know, it gets worse than that. Back during the World War II years, the laboratory pumped liquid plutonium from processing plutonium straight into Los Alamos Canyon, or rather a tributary of Los Alamos Canyon.
Was this ignorance or haste, or what's the rationale?
Both. But that little tributary canyon is called Acid Canyon to this day.
Nice.
Because they process plutonium with nitric acid. So, you know, fortunately, and you know, this should be known, the practices are certainly far, far better than they historically were. But going back to the chromium, this is chromium hexavalent, which your listeners may be familiar with because of the Aaron Brockovich movie. This was the contaminant that
Julia Roberts fought
against.
Yeah, Julia Roberts. That was a great movie.
Yeah.
All right. So same kind of stuff.
Same hexavalent chromium, yes. Same stuff.
Make you sick?
It's carcinogenic.
All right, so they are monitoring the groundwater and that chromium plume. And as far as I know, Jay, there's no real solution to it. Just hope it stays in place, hope it doesn't grow. There's been some talk, maybe we need to flush some fresh water into there to dilute it, but oh no, that might make it worse. So, you know, what's the best outcome? What's the worst outcome?
Well, they are pumping and treating you know, extracting that water, treating it, and re-injecting it. And there was recently, within the last month, there was a press release or something from the laboratory that I think was not the whole truth. It noted, first of all, current maps of the chromium hexavalent plume magically stop at the San Ildefonso border. but it's simply not known to what extent that this plume has migrated under Pledlow lands. Now, the laboratory press release touted the fact that apparently the concentration is going down at the San Ildefonso border. But this is arguably just because of dilution where they are injecting the treated water, and it's even possible that this is pushing the contaminants further onto Pledlow land. It's also, last summer, it was realized that contamination was further to the east-northeast than previously thought, and actually was detected within a mile and a half of a Los Alamos County drinking water production well. Now, as far as I know, there's not any evidence of chromium in the actual production well, but, you know, this is getting a little too close for comfort. And I want to repeat that the laboratory, you know, some 30 years ago was claiming that groundwater contamination was flat out impossible.
They're now claiming that they're about 50% cleaned up.
Yes.
With the nuclear waste on Lanel's property, and they're going to up production of pits, right?
Yeah, but let me give you context on that by what the laboratory and DOE means by more than halfway cleaned up. In 2016, the Department of Energy came out with an estimated cost of total cleanup, and it was less than $4 billion, which, you know, might seem like a lot of money, but in a massive government project, of course it's not. But in that estimate, the Department of Energy made the claim that there were only 5,000 cubic meters of radioactive waste to be treated. What DOE willfully failed to say is, like, there is 30 times as much waste in Area G, the laboratory's biggest dump, that they don't even mention, that they just plan to cap and cover and leave permanently buried, creating a de facto nuclear waste dump, you know, some 3 miles as the crow flies from the Rio Grande, and we have our sole source aquifer for the Espanola Basin, which means Los Alamos, Espanola, and Santa Fe drinking water. We're going to have that sitting for into perpetuity above our deep groundwater.
All right, so the obvious question for me, Jay, is this a problem created by the Trump administration? Is this a problem that can be fixed? Is this a problem that will never be addressed adequately? What's the future for this?
Well, you know, Trump alone certainly cannot be blamed for this. And, in fact, you mentioned expanded plutonium pit production.
Right.
And pit, in this case, this is a source of confusion, is like the pit of a peach, not a hole in the ground. In other words, it's the core. It's the core.
Size of a softball.
Yeah. And it's approximately that same size. But, you know, here's the irony, is that we're looking at expanded weapons programs at Los Alamos that are largely being driven by expanded plutonium pit production. And we're looking at weapons programs that are now just under $2 billion annually, while cleanup is a tenth of that, at around $200 million. So these programs that created the mess to begin with are continuing to be increased while cleanup stays flat. And one important thing I want to point out, perhaps for your more conservative listeners, is that the plutonium pits that will be produced will not be exact replicas of existing pits. And why is this important? It is because a plutonium pit has to implode. It's surrounded by conventional high explosives, so on detonation it's imploded so that it can reach a critical mass. But that implosion process has to be, you know, pretty much symmetrically perfect. So when you start to produce heavily modified plutonium pits, you are possibly degrading confidence in the nuclear weapon stockpile. So this can actually be a national security matter and could possibly prompt the United States back into full-scale testing, after which, you know, the other eight nuclear weapons powers are likely to start testing again. So I find a supreme irony here that we have that in the name of guaranteeing the safety and reliability of the stockpile, that is the claimed rationale, we're going to produce heavily modified plutonium pits that, A, can't be tested because of the current testing moratorium, or B, could prompt a return to testing, which would have serious global proliferation consequences.
So people can keep track of all of these and these evolving issues on your website. Is that the best thing to do? You don't hold meetings, things like that, do you? Do presentations?
We don't yet have one scheduled, but we plan on doing one in early November, and we will get the word out about that. And it will be specifically on expanded plutonium pit production and cleanup.
All right, so let us know. We will we'll let people know who are interested, and in the meantime, people can just go to your website, which is what?
www.nukewatch, that's NUKEWATCH.org.
Jay, thanks for keeping an eye on all this for us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Anytime, man. Appreciate
okay.
it. 45 minutes after 3 o'clock. Got a few minutes when we come back. We got about 10 minutes when we come back. Anything on your mind today you want to talk about, anything at all? It could be nukes, it could be guns, it could be hurricanes, it could be climate change, it could be anything. Or something, I don't know, something nice, something fun. Hatch Chili's, it's chili season. Anything on your mind, 424-1260-505 area code.